Hello, and welcome to this profile episode of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. Looking at a man who is not just one of Yugoslavia's greatest midfielders, but one of the nation's greatest managers also, Branko Zabec. Firstly, a quick podcast note. You may notice over the coming weeks that there will be the introduction of adverts into the show. This isn't something I really wanted to do. However, we're at the point where I've recorded an amount of the material and there's been an amount of demand for that particular material that I've had to move to a paid tier with my podcast host. As such, it's inevitable that I have to go somewhere to attempt to recoup some of those costs. At this point, introducing a premium tier isn't something that's particularly feasible. As such, adverts will have to do the hard work in that respect, for the time being at least. But on to today's main event, Branko Zabec. Zabec was a man of addiction to football and to alcohol. It would send him to an early grave in 1988, aged only 59, choking to death on meat during a drinking session with friends. That would be his fate was easy to see from a long way out. A tale from his days managing Eintracht Frankfurt shows that starkly. After a game against Hertha Berlin, to which he turned up drunk and almost fell asleep on the bench, journalists swarmed to try to get a picture of him in that state and to see whether or not Zabec could even construct a sentence. The club wouldn't allow it, so with Zabec more or less catatonic, he was rolled up inside a carpet, smuggled out of the dressing room into the boot of a car. That it happened was testament to the tragic state Zabec got himself into. That it was tolerated was a testament to just how good he had been. Yet argument would reign as to just whether he was a better player or a better manager, and he is considered as one by many as the greatest of all Croatian players. He began in the youth ranks of Gradanski in the dying embers of World War II, before bouncing around the smaller sides in Zagreb. Postar, the postal service team, Lokomotiva, the railway team, and then Milicina, the police team. It wasn't until Zabec was 22 that his most famous association began, Partizan. Zabec, the player, had two key attributes. His pace, being one of the fastest players in the world at the time, and his utility, able to play on both sides of the pitch in either defence or midfield, without anyone really being that sure of what his best position was. Partizan used him most on the left wing, opposite Miloš Milutinović, but would slowly transition him into a central midfielder as time went and his influence grew. He would become captain of Partizan and captain of the nation come the 1958 World Cup. However, he was a Partizan player in an era where Partizan were never the dominant club, and in 1959 he remedied that by moving across the city to join Crvena Zvezda, winning the title in his first season there. Come his 32nd birthday, Zabec would be permitted to leave Yugoslavia and see out the rest of his career in Germany for Alemannia Aachen in the second tier. By his retirement, he was already showing his coaching talents. Gunter Netzer, who played alongside him at Alemannia, stated he practiced so much the young players despaired and that his youth team had to wait to play over 100 times because Zabec was taking over sessions and forcing them to overrun. It was clear already that Zabec was more than a workhorse as a player. He expected the same as a manager, and his first assignment would be Dinamo. Branko Zabec's Dinamo were perhaps the heaviest drinkers of any team in the history of football. Zagreb's reputation was as the Bohemian capital of Yugoslavia, and Dinamo's reputation was to be the cheerleaders of that. As a result, there was an expectation in Zagreb that the team indulge in this atmosphere. Having as manager one of football's most legendary alcoholics was only going to end one way with certain players. Zvezda firstly demanded the side worked hard, but then had to tolerate that their best player at the time, Stef Lamza, partied hard also. Lamza tells of a time after training where he was driving Zvezda home, and in spite of it being the night before a game, Zvezda taunted Lamza into a marathon drinking competition, where Lamza drank him under the table. As Dinamo manager, he won the Fairs Cup in a campaign that would be tinged with tragedy, as Lamza's own career was ended between the semis and the final owing to a drunken accident after Lamza fell through a hotel balcony, having been locked in his room by Dinamo management after drinking an entire bottle of rum for breakfast. If you wish to listen to more about Stef Lamza, we do also have a profile episode on him already released. Zvezda's success in Zagreb earned him an opportunity back in what would become his adopted home of Germany, and most specifically, at Bayern Munich. At this point, Bayern had not won the league since 1932, and Zvezda was brought in to remedy that. That he did, winning the Bundesliga and the Cup in 1969, yet did it while also clashing heads with the players. In the words of Franz Beckenbauer, "Our youth ended with Branko Zvezda." Sepp Maier recalled being forced to train on a frozen pitch before complaining. Zvezda sent him to the showers and told him to come back tomorrow. The following day, Maier was forced to train for 2 hours on his own, doing full goalkeeper drills on concrete. Training began at 7 a.m. and ran longer than any, with the team being supremely fit and supremely consistent, with only 13 players used across that double winning season. Zvezda, however, would not last the following season, with it being clear early that the league would not be retained and that the players were not happy. 1970 would be a year to forget for him. Not only would he be fired by Bayern, he would require pancreas surgery, which led him being told to stay off the booze. Advice he would not listen to. Amongst all this, he joined Stuttgart for a two-season stay in which he kept them mid-table, before returning to Yugoslavia for a one-season stint with Hajduk, winning the cup and reaching the semis of the UEFA Cup Winners' Cup. He would then return to Germany in 1973 to take over Eintracht Braunschweig, remaining there for 5 years in harmony with having a free-spending liquor maker sponsoring the club. He brought in talents such as Danilo Popivoda and Paul Breitner, as they became securely ensconced as a team at the sharp end of the table. While they dropped off towards the end of his stay, that he was in demand was already known, and moved to ambitious Hamburg. It was at Hamburg, with the improved players and greater expectations, where Zvezda would start his terminal decline come his final season. Much as at Bayern, he won the title in his first year before reaching the European Cup final in his second. This was the end of the good news. The European Cup final loss was preceded by a league loss, which meant that Hamburg would not retain their Bundesliga title. Players felt that the sole reason for this was that, as the season went on, Zvezda ramped the training up, believing that a successful team was also one that could absorb more training. Players began to complain openly. Kevin Keegan stated, "Nobody can stand his training." The second issue was his drinking going out of control. He had drunkenly slept through the departure for a notable away game against Dortmund. As he sped to catch the team up, he was pulled over by police, where he ended up getting tested for how drunk he was. The answer was 10 times over the drink driving limit, yet he still managed to get to the game and be on the bench for the whole thing. Spectre was falling asleep on the bench, and on one notable occasion where Hamburg were 2-0 down at half-time, was so drunk that he came in to give them the team talk and told them that they had lost and to sort themselves out for the next game, being under the impression that it was actually full-time, not half-time. Just before Christmas 1980, Hamburg had had enough and sacked him. He would go on to Dortmund the following season, leading them to their best league place in a decade, but losing his job as, similarly to Hamburg, Dortmund were unwilling to tolerate Sabetsch's level of alcoholism and the issues stemming from it. In one game, he had literally fallen backwards off the bench drunk. He would then spend a year at Eintracht Frankfurt, not all of it in a carpet, before a short final stint in 1984 at Dynamo. Sabetsch was an incredibly intelligent person. Had he not chosen football, he had been offered a scholarship to complete a physics degree at university. He used his scientific background in his coaching to prepare and put together some of the most brutal training regimes. The discipline he demanded was incredible. Kevin Keegan went to the lengths of hiring a helicopter to get him to training at Hamburg so as to ensure he wouldn't be late. Players were physically prepared beyond belief. Sabetsch's motto was that it didn't matter if you missed a shot, but if you couldn't run to take the shot in the first place, that was a problem. In doing so, he changed German football, and while elements of his management would not be carried forward, many would be, and would influence managers for a long time. He's almost like a precursor of Jose Mourinho, in so much as his methods were undeniably effective in the short term, but would burn teams out in the long run. Had he been able to combat his stress without resorting to the bottle, he would have likely achieved even more. Even as it is, he remains one of the country's greatest ever players and one of the country's greatest ever managers. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.